I'm Lance Carter, and you're listening to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. Mike Mills' latest film, Beginners, is an incredibly personal one. Based on events in his own life, the film is a story of a graphic designer, Ewan McGregor, whose father, Christopher Plummer, comes out at the age of 75 after his wife dies. I talked to Mills in a roundtable interview at South by Southwest, where he told me that since McGregor is basically playing him, he wanted Mills to record all the dialogue so he could study his voice. Mills agreed, "As long as you're not going to imitate me," he said. After all was said and done, Mills thought McGregor did an amazing job. And once you see the film, you'll think so as well. Mike talks with us about writing, shooting the film in continuity, and how you cast a dog. This site takes a lot of work, so I really do appreciate it when you support our advertisers. And now, here's Mike.
Do you ever get sick of watching? I mean, how many times do you think you've seen it completed? Not sick, but you're like...
Oh, no, sick. I was trying to count. You know, I think I've only seen it probably like 70 times.
Only?
Through the editing and all that. But yeah, I don't need to watch it anymore. I like watching parts, like, but sitting through the whole thing is a little claustrophobic.
Are you the kind of person who wants to... who sneaks in the back of a theater and
to watch? That's the best thing in the world.
Yeah, is it?
That's the best thing in the world, yeah. For a filmmaker. I mean, that's like, that's what you've been working for years for. Mm-hmm. And also, it is really nice to see little parts of the film. Especially after you haven't seen it for a while. Right. Like last night, I saw the end through the little window, you know, the door. And that was sweet. That was great. And I'm so proud of everybody. Yeah. Like, not just the actors, but the crew. And I really love my crew, and I love my actors, and Dave's piano at the end. I saw him record that. There's this piano at the very end. Mm-hmm. And I just remember watching him play that and just like, I love music. And I was like, Dave, God, you're so fluid. And he just kind of came up with that. And so it's fun. A lot of it's the parts you can detach from yourself are really fun.
Today I went to your website.
Oh yeah.
And I check a lot of stuff. I think this movie, or maybe all your work, integrates everything you love, because you draw, you design, the music.
Yeah.
Tell me, how is movies cathartic from you?
Yeah.
How do you integrate everything?
Well, this one especially. Like, I do think, hopefully, I don't... Because I do graphics, I do art, and I do film, and I don't really separate them in my head. So I have shows and galleries, I have videos, and in my film work, I have still stuff. And to me, that's just a contemporary visual language. Or that's my contemporary visual language. And then this film especially, you know, I really think, I've been trying to describe this today, but like, after my dad died, it's like my second parent's dying, and part of grief is not just like down and depressed, it's like life. You know, it's like, I'm on the earth, I'm alive. You know, I'm here. I'm still here. I've seen death. I got real close to it, but, like, I'm here. So who am I? What do I do? What is my stuff? You know? So I took everything I had and put it in this movie. Like, I did kind of take everything I love and just put it in. Not consciously, but just because I was in this sort of intoxicated life place where I was very... You know, when someone dies, at least for me, you're in love with everything, strangely. Right? If you like chicken, you fucking love chicken after someone dies. Because you're like, I'm so lucky I get to do this. And some, my dear person just doesn't anymore. So that's really vivid in you.
I just lost somebody in December, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Yeah.
But yeah.
It's not all down.
No.
Yeah, it's like, especially my parents were 74 and 79 when they passed away. So it wasn't like they got hit by a car at 40, you know?
Yeah.
And they had intense lives, and they, yeah. Anyways, next question.
Do you have a question? Or?
What do you think was the most challenging? There's a lot of different challenges when you're creating a film. But is there any one thing that sticks out to you as being the most challenging for this film?
To be honest, like by the time I got to like shooting the film, if that's what you mean. That's easy. Shooting the film was fun and easy and great, and the thing I like to do most of my life. It's the thing where I feel the most alive and what I was meant to do, and I adore it. And the hardest part is getting through writing. It's really hard because you're alone, and I'm not really a writer. I love writing, but it's just a long, dark tunnel, you know? And then trying to get your film made, hearing no so often, hearing it be repeated back to you in the worst way, hearing it be described and understood and misunderstood in the worst way, hearing people just not be interested for years is the worst part.
But do you think this is the most difficult thing, you know, to get the money, to get people to believe in the movie, or to take everything you had inside and write it down?
Everything, taking everything I have inside and writing it out is difficult, but it's a joy. It's lucky. How lucky am I to get to do that? You know, and it's, and it, I'm, while I'm not a great writer, I'm good enough that I can do it. You know, I can make myself kind of happy writing. Going around and trying to get money and trying to get people, you know, when you're trying to get actors and you're trying to get money, you don't just go and meet the actor. You don't just go meet the money person. You meet, like, the agent, the lawyer, the manager, the other agent, the other lawyer, the other manager, someone who just knows them, someone who met them in a coffee shop, you know? And even that is not, like, I'm excited to fight for my movie in any way. But often when you're doing that in Los Angeles, you're bumping up against the worst side of capitalism, which is brutal and unkind, and it's just like trying to get a loan from a bank, basically.
Casting. At what point did, like, you and Pop in your head, and Christopher pop in your head for the parts?
That, you know, I don't write with people in my head at all, and then I get done writing, and I'm very confused because I had to, like, get into this world and find people, and it's really hard. And then with this, I really wanted to cast the dad after I casted the Oliver character, because I wanted them to look right, and there's so many great actors, but if they don't feel like family, then it wasn't going to be good. So Christopher is always in my mind, and obviously be awesome, right? And then Ewan, for a while, I was looking at different ages, and I didn't know what I was doing. And then when Ewan came up, it's like a pipe dream. You're like, ah, crap, you know, another great idea that's not going to happen. And luckily he read it, and luckily he liked it, you know. So in a way, it's impossible, but then once he read it, it was easy. They all worked for scale. They, you know, they put their hearts into it. They did it for the great reasons. They worked for scale, but they didn't act like that at all. I treated it with total importance. And so, yeah, Ewan wasn't obvious to me because I didn't know if he would do a movie like this. You know, doing smaller movies like this in this day and age, or like when I was from 2007 till now, is not the most popular thing in LA.
So you've got some great performances, Ewan McGregor, and I was in this personal movie, and I was wondering, are there some things about you that you feel no actor could recreate or be able to justify?
Well, the main thing I said to all of them, like, I guess you guys read those the letters in the press book. I said, like, don't copy me. Don't. And, like, the idea is not that you're mimicking us. Mm-hmm. You have to find a way to make it your own. And they were both so smart about that in different ways. Like, Plummer knew that, and, like, he knew how to, like, he'd be like, Michael, tell me another story. tell him just something about my dad. He's like, I want to steep myself in your film. But then he knew how to be himself. He knew that he had to make it a story. He knew he had to go connect to people through the lens. And same, in a different way, Ewan did. Ewan's just so casual and easygoing, and, like, I adore him. It was never copy me. It was never. The weird thing is, we're the exact same size and everything.
Weird.
So he does wear some of my clothes just out of poverty, just because we didn't have enough money to make the movie.
Is that your shirt?
No, but it's so much stuff. But it was like, it looks so much fucking better on him. It was sort of embarrassing and depressing, and that was kind of what it was like the whole film in a funny way. But I think you and I do share some, like, emotional frequencies, or we're a similar kind of emotional guy. Mm-hmm. So I think he was like, and being a straight guy, which is the most privileged thing to be, a blue-eyed, European descent straight guy, there's still some unsatisfying parts to it if you want to be emotional, if you want to be vulnerable, if you want to be that. You can get sort of boxed in. I think both of us experienced that, and both of us were really happy that there was Oliver to play around in a more emotional, vulnerable way.
How do you use music I know music is very big in your life.
Yeah.
So how do you use it before the movie and after?
Before, music is everything to me. I was in a band before I was in anything. It's how I kind of figured out myself. And when I'm writing, if I know a scene needs to be a certain way and a certain piece of music has that feeling, it could just be like in one chord or just one change, I'll put that music on noise-canceling headphones and put it on loop and just play it for like 6 hours while I write because I want this one feeling. So music can really guide you like that, you know, and just for like feelings. And then my parents like music too. My mom is really into she played the Sting all the time, right, the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So that's how that jazz blues piano got in. And then my dad listened to classical music, so all those Bach, they're Bach cello suites that are done on the French horn. Mm. So, and those really helped me divide the movie up. You know, it kind of helps you unconsciously know which side of the movie you're on. And then, I don't know, I love scores. Like, I love George De La Rue, and I love Jelly Roll Morton. So the score that we did was kind of George De La Rue meets Jelly Roll Morton, hopefully. The piano stuff, the kind of romantic piano. So, yeah, if I wasn't, I wish I was a better musician, I'd maybe be a musician. I wish I had better ears.
I saw in the production notes that this was shot in continuity.
Yeah.
As an actor, it's got to be awesome, but as a director,
That's awesome.
Is it really?
Yeah, I insist. Yeah.
Yeah?
It makes my life easier because we're all experiencing the story together. And it makes you just think differently. I also insist on 2 weeks of rehearsal, which kind of blows everybody's mind. And so with this movie, we started with Christopher in the hospital, and we ended up with Christopher dying. And it took 2 weeks. And then it was Thanksgiving, so we had a week off. And that was great, too, to break. And Melanie and Ewan and I just rehearsed. And then we started at the party, and we went to the end until they got back together. And it's great. And even within the day, I don't like shoot out a room. That's how you're supposed to do it. And like you're in this room and you're lit, so you shoot the room every scene, and then you go and shoot the hallway. If we start in the hallway, I go in the hallway, and then go in the room, go back in the hallway.
Yeah. Really?
Because I don't use a lot of lights, so it's easy to do it.
Wow.
I was going to ask you, since you do have such a varied art background, how did you feel you made a transition from one to the other, or was it a natural flow? Can you talk about that?
I think for me, obviously it's a huge transition, like getting into the film world. I started out doing music videos and ads, and even getting into that from doing graphics and graphic covers was quite hard. Mm-hmm. It was hard for the rest of the world. And it's hard for me to learn how to use a crew and go from being graphic design very solo. Mm-hmm. And then you're got 30 people all of a sudden. And now I love having 30 people. I love being captain of the ship. And I love making a great experience for everybody. Like, I love being the host. To me, that's what the director is. It's the host. But yeah, every time it's a big transition in terms of your interaction with the world. But in my head, they're all in a spectrum. They're all the same. I'm trying to communicate to people. I'm trying to, I love red. Like, I love red. And so I want to use red. It could be on a shirt. It could be in the movie. It can be on Anna's dress. You know what I mean? There's different ways to do it. But to me, I'm exercising my same love of red, you know?
I thought it was very interesting, and it worked, that you used the dog.
Uh-huh.
And I think the dog kind of symbolizes a lot, or relates to the people. I was like a loner, is affectionate, kind of mellow, kind of like the Jelly Roll Morton music of dogs, I feel.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, were you wrestling with that concept at all, or was it always definite you were going to have this dog there, or the subtitle, something that came in later?
Well,
or?
Yeah, I gotta say, I owe a lot to my dad dying. Sounds weird, but it's true, because that grief time, when you're like intoxicated and braver than you normally are, I was like, fuck it, there's a dog in this movie, and he talks. and because I do that all the time, I talk to my dog, and I inherited my dad's dog, and they're there looking at me writing, and I talk to them, and I'm talking to them about the script. I just talk all day long to them. And there is my dog's a border collie, highly intelligent dog, Jack Russell, highly intelligent. They look me in the eyes. They do know, 150 words, you know. So I'm talking, and then I just start, fuck it, I'm just going to put that in. And that was a great thing that grief enabled in me, was like, go for it. You know, do whatever you want and kind of believe that that will work, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's so many, I just have a blog in which I'm really enjoying doing, and I just wrote something about Chuck Jones,
yeah.
The guys
mm-hmm.
that did the Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And that book, there's a great book that he wrote, and their motto is, it has to make us laugh, has to surprise us, it's not for kids, it's for us, and it has to, like, drive us crazy with fun pleasure, and if it's doing that, it'll work. I just believe it. Wow. And that's, I did that with this, you know.
I like your talking to actors pictures. We have the
the emails.
The dog.
Yeah.
How do you cast a dog?
You can't. It's like a human. There's canine actors, and they have a resume, and they
do
have trainers. And Cosmo's worked on a lot of films, mm-hmm. and so they all came in, and then I met Cosmo, and it's really the combo of the dog, the canine actor, and the trainer. And Mathilde is his trainer, and she's an amazing French, totally organic, totally interesting person. And she drives up, and she also does the Beverly Hills Chihuahuas. She has a bunch of Chihuahuas. So she drives up my driveway, and she pulls out a Chihuahua and hands it to me through the car window, and I'm holding the Chihuahua and helping her out, and I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, this person's loose and easy and fun. But Cosmo is just a deep soul. That guy's like 1,000 years old, and he really just looks at you, and I think Jack Russells do have a thing where they stare at you. It's like part of their breeding. And so he does that. He'll just, like, look you in the eyes just for a very long time, and it's an unnerving, great thing.
Being this movie so personal, is what you expected when you finish editing and you see it on the screen? Is what you expected? Is more? Is not what you expected?
It's, I think a movie, like when I do a record cover or a music video, it's short. It's kind of like dating. And dating can be what you expect, or a one-night stand can be kind of what you expect. When you're in a marriage or a long-term relationship, it's what you expected and utterly unique and utterly different and utterly unexpected. And a movie, both my films are a marriage. They're like, they're great and they're difficult and they're moments of joy and moments of, like, you just felt like you screwed up so bad and... So all that happened. I sleep at night, so I feel like I must have done okay. Like, you know, you can imagine the many different ways I might not be able to sleep at night doing this story. And I feel like my dad would have a long list of things that he felt like I got wrong, and he would be okay, you know? And that's kind of the main issue for me. Does that make sense?
Are you happy?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm as happy as I could be. I'm not like a kind of guy that goes like, yeah, that rocked, you know. I just don't do that. But I'm not crying, so I must be happy. Like, I'm not going insane, so I must be okay.
Yeah, it's something I just wanted you to talk about your mom a little
bit
too. Yes, because, you know, this is kind of random dad coming out and stuff, but I saw so much... Yeah. In the film, too.
I love Mary Page Keller, also played her, and I thought she was so wonderful. And I love the mom and the young Oliver scenes, and they came together so easily. And to me, the mom is the secret weapon and the secret message of the whole film, you know? And the film's a bit about absences, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the dad's absent from that scene, from those scenes. The mom's absence from the gay dad's world, and there's these sort of unreconcilable gaps, unreconcilable lacks, but I do feel like, or like holes, right? Where's the mom and the new dad? Mm-hmm. Where's the dad and the old mom? And that's what my life's a little bit like, you know, my real experience. But they utterly impact each other. And I hope that while the use of the mom is really economical, and she's like these little slivers, that it's key. You know, to me at least, it's key to the structure of the story and Oliver's evolution.
Speaking of importance of the mother character, you have Ewan McGregor dressing up as Freud at
costume
party. How conscious were you of the Freudian elements of this story?
Well, I mean, conscious.
Yeah, I mean, that was my
Freud would say. Yeah. Freud would say not conscious enough. But I, you know, I knew what I was doing with that one, and I know that the, you know, to me, the love story. Well, put it this way: sure. I said that the piano, the blues jazz piano, is the mom's. He learned that from the mom. It's part of the his and the mom's relationship. But that music plays over Oliver and Anna's love scenes. Mm-hmm. So that sort of answers your question. There's, and I think all of our relationships, if you want to admit this or not, that's your business, but all of our love relationships are echoes of our primary relationships with our parents. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think there's a lot of echoes between Georgia, who's the mom, and Anna, you know.
If you compare the experiences about when you did Tom Sawyer, what did you learn about filmmaking, about life, doing that movie, and then doing this one?
I learned so much on both. It's like hard, it'd be really hard. It's like two marriages, right? Or like two complete going to college. Like, what did you learn? I learned a ton doing Thumbsucker. Maybe the thing I learned the most, or the thing I enjoyed the most, was the actors. And this creating an environment where an actor can do things that surprise themselves and you. Creating an environment that's inviting the unpredictable. It's inviting a real reactivity to what's happening in the moment. And that I could do that. Oh, I can provide that. I know something about me, I don't know why, I'm good at doing that. Or I like it, put it that way. I'm not good, I like it. And they seem to respond, and I love that. You know, it's like I'm formerly a very shy person. You know, like very, I'm not shy anymore, but I used to be very shy. And so what an actor does blows me away. And I'm sort of, when they're doing it, and when they're really free over there, I'm like probably their best audience in the world. Like, I just am so impressed, and I'm so envious. I wish I could be like that. I wish I could... You know, that seems so fun and free and mind-blowing. How do you do that? And that, so creating that environment is maybe what I learned last time. And this time I think it's like being braver about, like, trusting that you can tell a story that's, like, really concrete and specific and that it'll be shareable. And trusting that it could be funny. Like, I feel like this one I embraced that my family's funny and I can be funny and, like, trying to just... being more comfortable about that.
Oh, that's one more? Yeah.
Go
for it. You recorded the dialogue for Ewan.
So to get the accent, which your dad did an amazing job on.
He did.
Like when I talk to him, dad is like, "Fuck, you don't speak English. You don't speak American." You know? he asked me to record the whole script. And I said, as long as you promise me you're not going to imitate me, because I do not want you to get locked in. So I would do, like, a line, and then and the microphone's there, and I go, "Now, Ewan, do not say it like that, okay?" And then I'd say a line, and I go, "Okay, remember, don't, you know," just kind of make all these jokes as I was reading it about, you know, not doing it. But I think that's how his sound coach works, or dialect coach, is to get a specific voice and to... study something specifically rather than just have this abstract idea of what an accent is.
He does the voices amazingly.
Right? Yeah. And one time, like, he was having problems. He has a heavy Scottish accent.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing monologues, and it was the only time where it kind of came up. Like, he was sort of tripping up on a sound. And then she would do this thing where she'd say the sound back to him, ooh, ah, e, and she had these sentences like ike, like dike, like da, 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 and there's like little monotonic things. It was the only time I was at the end of the shoot. I was like, "How do you do it?" He goes, "Well, I don't think about it. It's like playing the drums. Like, if you think about playing the drums, it doesn't work. Like, you lose it. So I just have to, like, let go." And those little... sounds are just, he just says the sound a couple times and he just goes back to playing the drums.
When he's not doing the scene, does he go back to his normal accent?
Yeah, in between takes.
Yeah.
Gives himself. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Tilda did the same thing, you know, in Thumbsucker. She's much more high British accent.
Mm-hmm.
But same thing, and my father came to Thumbsucker, the set, and he met Tilda. No, he's watching the monitor and she's doing American. And then he met Tilda, and she's got this very fancy British accent. And he came up to me and he goes, there's two women that look exactly the same. And I was like, no, that's Tilda. That's, you know. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thanks for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.